Grab a coffee and discover Vegas-level excitement with BetMGM Casino, now introducing our hottest exclusive, Friends, the one with multi-drop. Your favorite classic television show is being reimagined into your favorite casino game featuring iconic images from the show. Spin our new exclusive because we're not on a break. Play Friends, the one with multi-drop, exclusively at BetMGM Casino. Want even more options? Pull up a seat and check out a wide variety of table games from blackjack to poker. Or head over to the arcade for nostalgic casino thrills. Download the BetMGM Ontario app today. You don't want to miss out. 19 plus to wager, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, please contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 to speak to an advisor free of charge. BetMGM operates pursuant to an operating agreement with iGaming Ontario.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon, and in this episode, a special interview. Dominic Dale is retiring at the end of the season. He's told us all year he's going to do it, and he hasn't changed his mind. Dominic's been a professional since 1992. He's won two ranking events. He's been part of the scene, been part of the circuit, a very distinctive part as well, a very popular part, I think. And we're going to hear a lot more from him in commentary, and he's planning to play seniors, as he explains in the interview. But I just wanted to sit down with Dominic and reflect on his career, on his great memories, his favourite matches, and indeed his future plans. Now, as is tradition, but long-time listeners will know this, when we have interviews on the podcast, quite often we have background noise. There's a little bit of music. We're in a hotel, a little bit of music. It's not like that time with David Grace in the bowling alley in Barnsley, which was, in retrospect, unlistenable. Not David's fault. My fault. Little bit of noise. At one point, a couple of people walked past, sort of laughing, not at us, but, you know, just happy to be alive, I guess. But anyway, there's a little bit of noise, but so what? It's a podcast. It's fine. You'll be listening mainly to Dominic Dale, who has had, you know, a better career than most. I think that's the point. And we're going to hear all about it now. Well, Dominic, you're certainly not shy, but you are retiring. can you tell us, firstly, when you made the decision and why you made the decision?
I think several years ago, when I stopped working on my game and thinking of changing cues and having been a little more disinterested, I suppose. And then all of a sudden the governing body introduced this scheme whereby you were guaranteed to have £20,000, no matter what happened. So I thought, well, okay, I can suffer practicing an hour and a half a day and see where it takes me. And then, you know, I stayed on the tour for a few years and I had a fantastic season by my standards last year. I think I only lost one first round in every event. But, you know, I was practicing probably 2.5 to 3 hours a day there. And I that was something I didn't really want to do anyway. And this season I thought, well, do you know what? I really, you know, it's so many tournaments, 20 odd tournaments or something like that. I just don't want to, you know, play that many tournaments anymore. I'm 53 years old now. And when you think you've got to qualify in one place, like, for instance, take the Welsh Open, I had to go to Barnsley to qualify, won that match. And then I had to go to Llandudno to play the rest of the tournament. So if you're doing two trips for the majority of tournaments, it's a lot of travelling. And, you know, at my age, I just wanted to, you know, say goodbye to it all. I shall definitely have a go at the seniors tour with only a few tournaments sprinkling there. I can enjoy the game and play it in its true spirit, really, as an amateur. Mm. And I want to focus on the commentary work if I can. I mean, I really enjoy it. Hopefully I can get enough to subsist, but, you know, I'll try that. But in terms of professional snooker, I have definitely had enough now.
So it doesn't sound like it was a hard decision. It sounds like it's quite an easy decision.
Yeah, do you know, as the season's gone on, I thought, you know, I wonder if I'll ever regret thinking of retiring. And I thought, well, do you know, definitely not. You know, I can't wait to have a few weeks off and focus just on the World Championships. I'll begin practicing for that at the very end of March. That'll be my last hurrah, so to speak. And I'm looking forward to giving it one last shot, and I shall commit to it fully. And then after that, yeah, I'll be retired, and it'll probably hit me for six when it happens. That, crikey, that's it. Someone's beat me in the World Championships, and that's it now. It's over. But I was trying to prepare all season for that, and it's probably affected some of my performances because I've sort of been a bit lackluster, really, and slipshod in my ways a bit. But, you know, I am looking forward to retiring, to think that, you know, I can just probably work, you know, I don't know, 50, 60 days a year at most if I'm, you know, I don't know how much commentary I may get, but if I can just, you know, get enough to survive, I'll be retired for the majority of the year and I can just enjoy my long walks and runs, you know, in the Cotswolds where I live. And when I think of it, 32 years as a pro is a long time to commit to any sport. And yeah, I've definitely had enough.
Right. I was going to ask you about how you thought you'd feel, because obviously we don't know where your last match will be. You were at the Crucible last year, could be there, could be in qualifying.
Yeah.
But then there'll be a moment where, like you say, the realisation, because it's been your life, not just as a pro, but as a child, you know, coming through the junior amateur ranks, playing snooker, everything is about the next tournament, isn't it? The next tournament.
Yeah.
Now there's not going to be a next tournament. So how do you think you will feel? I suppose you won't know till it happens.
I think because I haven't had such a great season, there have been large gaps in the season, I've really enjoyed not having to practice. So, but to think, you know, I won't ever be a professional player again, it will be a different thing altogether, I suppose. But I mustn't forget that I will be playing on the seniors tour, and so I will have snooker still, and I will still be meeting people, some of the old guys I haven't seen for years. It'd be lovely, and to give something back to the sport, to have a bit of fun with the audience, and to play the game for me in its true spirit. One thing I can say for certain is, had there been sort of 8 or 9 tournaments, as there once was pre sort of 2011, before Barry Hearn took the snooker over, I think I would carry on, because there's still enough gaps in the season to enjoy it.
Could you not have just entered some tournaments?
I suppose I could have done, but I'd have dropped off the tour in no time at all, and I thought, well, yeah, what's the point?
You retired on your own terms then, in that case?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll still be on the tour, which, you know, is amazing to think. The standard's so high these days, it still surprises me, given my abilities, that I've, you know, stayed on the tour without ever dropping off. It's quite some feat, because I've never been one of the game's greats, but, you know, I'm pleased to think I've left a mark on the game in some small way.
Well, what you are, Dom, is that we talk about the class of 92. Now, you were part of that class, players who turned pro in 1992. So let's go back to that summer at the Norbrek in Blackpool. What do you remember about that? Because a lot of people now, maybe watching the tour, would have no conception of what that was like, how many players were involved and how it all worked, the amount of matches that were going on.
Yeah, I remember it very well, because it used to play in blocks of qualifiers. Mm. And when I turned pro, I'm sure there were upwards of 900 pros. For the 92-93 season. And I remember you used to have to play some, there were 10 tournaments, I think, from memory, and you had to play the first 4 rounds in all 10 events. And then whatever you left with, let's say you left in 5 of them, in round 5. So then you get the next batch of seeds, the 1-2-8 would come in. And then you'd play another group of matches. Of course, the standard would be higher because you're playing the better players then. And so let's say you're left in 2 or 3, then the top 64 in the world would come in for round, I don't know, 7 or 8 or whatever it would be. And then, you know, one thing I remember, a lot of the low-ranked players, or most of the players at that time in the earlier rounds, there'd be card scores going on and sort of friendly gambling. They'd be going out, enjoying the nightlife and drinking and all sorts of things would happen. But when the top 1-2-8, top 64 would come in, all of that stopped. Mm. These were the guys that wanted to do something in the games, that were already established, already earning a bit of a living at the sport. And they took it more seriously, and you could see the difference straight away. And it was sort of sorting out the wheat from the chaff in a way. You knew who the players were that wanted to do something in the sport and who were there really for a good time. And you quickly learnt, and you did learn quickly. You were playing top players on conditions that I wasn't used to, these brand new cloths and tighter pockets. I wasn't familiar with that on the amateur tour before I turned pro. And it was a learning curve, and you know, you learned pretty quickly, you had to. And do you know when I look back now and see the way the game has changed as well, the shot selection, the, you know, different styles of play, how technique in snooker has come to the fore now, and everybody seems to have a great technique. There are very few natural players left at the top of the game anyway. And it's great to be part of so many different eras, really, and to have played some of the games. Great.
Yeah, I mean, when you turned pro, it was still Terry was still a top player. Dennis Taylor was there. Cliff, Alex Higgins was still going.
Yeah,
your Eddie Charltons, all these legends who you'd watched in the '80s, and then the new brigade: Ronnie, John, Mark coming through.
Yeah,
Stephen Henry's world champion. Very exciting. Like as you say, actually at that point, different eras were sort of crossing over, weren't they? And you were suddenly part of it all.
Yeah, it was amazing, really. You got to know a lot of the players very quickly. And I used to practice with John Higgins, you know, in the Norbrek, and we were good friends back then. And it's incredible. Do you know, when you used to practice with John, you would play John and you'd realise very quickly you just have that extra something, that little X factor, as they call it. You could tell, you know, there are lots of players like that. Ronnie, of course, was such a fast player. Instead of walking around the table wondering what shot he played, he just saw the shot, played it, and that's why, you know, made that 147 in 5 minutes and something. You know, incredible player, and people used to queue up and pay their pound at the Norbrek to watch him play. And Jimmy White, I remember him playing Jimmy White, I think he beat him 5-1 in no time. He was an incredible player at that time. He was just head and shoulders above everybody. And what a talent he's proved to be, and, you know, the game's greatest ever player. And if Stephen Hendry tells me that, then you know it's true. And, you know, to think, you know, I've played people like Steve Davis, Jimmy White, Stephen Hendry, you know, some of the greats, all-time greats of the game. I'm very privileged to, you know, and I remember even now, you know, I've played Jimmy White in recent seasons, and every time I play and lose or win against him, you know, I'd shake his hand and say, you know, it's always a privilege, because it really is, because people like those, you know, Jimmy White, Alex Higgins, they made the game so popular, it helped the likes of us coming through to have a sport, you know, to possibly earn our living at, because they made it so popular and such a televisual sport.
What do you remember of your first ever match? Anything?
In terms of the actual match itself, nothing really at all, except so I played in New Zealand, the Brent Wells, and I won 5-3. And another player I was keen to see the progress of was a young Thailand player, Nopadon Nopachorn, who beat me in the World Amateur Final. I thought he was a magnificent player. But I did speak to him, you know, as he turned pro, and he'd had his cue stolen about 3 or 4 weeks before his first professional season started. And I remember him being 4-2 up on Mark Williams, a young Mark Williams, and Mark beat him 5-4, I think. You know, it was great to see, you know, there were other great Thailand players around. James Wattanau was still at the fore in those days, in the early 90s. He's still, I mean, I think he got to world number 3 and was the torchbearer for all the Thai players. It's great to think there's still Thai players now playing, you know, at the top of the game. But, yeah, it's just amazing to see the way the game's changed and, you know, the evolution of cues as well, really. You know, lots of players when I took were still using very old cues from the 30s and the 40s. That's all gone now. Players are using modern cues, modern equipment, much stronger in the shaft, and this is why the standard is just, you know, just risen out of all proportions.
I mean, how much higher is the standard now compared to then?
Massively higher. I mean, you could look at the draw and think, well, I'd have to play poorly to lose to him or her, whoever it would be. You know, there were still lady players at the time. Anne-Marie Farrand had turned professional, Stacey Hilliard, and Alison Fisher, Karen Corr. They were on the professional men's tour, I suppose you could call it at the time. It was, you know, it's great to know that the women players still playing now. Yeah, I mean, the standards changed. Players score so much heavily now. And in the qualifiers, the public don't get to see the qualifiers. And honestly, the standard can be absolutely out of this world. But you put some of those players in front of the television cameras, the big audiences playing the game's top players, and they can really, really struggle. And the audience probably don't think a lot of these players playing the qualifiers. Some of the standard of the play is just incredible. You know, I sit in my chair, might have left a difficult long red on, and I'm thinking, he's going to pop this. And like 20 years ago, you think, very unlikely they would, and you could almost pick shots that they wouldn't pop. Because technique has changed as well, and because of that application in the sport, there's so many great super coaches now. I think temperaments have improved massively in all sports, really, certainly snooker. There are a few players that can be considered a little volatile, but you know, I think there was a lot more volatility within the players lower down the ranks, certainly. You know, in my day when I first turned pro. But, you know, there's just the top 32 in the world 20-odd years ago, there were probably 15 or 18 of them. You thought, well, you know, I can beat these guys. Now the top 32 in the world, there's very little difference between some of the top 16 and some of the lower ranks of the top 32. There's very little difference. The standard is fantastic. The sentries flying in all over the place, which you just didn't see so often, you know, in the earlier days of my career.
Talk now about the Triple Crown, but of course the BBC used to have four tournaments. You won one of them, the Grand Prix. That was a big deal, wasn't it? David Vine and everything. Oh. You know, it's everything you've watched, suddenly you're not only part of, but you're there with a trophy.
Massive. I think I got to the semi-finals and Terry Griffiths had decided to retire and he was taken out of the rankings immediately. So I think I was ranked 54 and I went up to 53, something like that. And then here I was playing John Higgins at Bournemouth in front of a capacity audience, TV, and David Vine as a presenter. You know, everything I'd watched in previous sort of generation as a child growing up, to be part of it, and then to walk out 5-3 ahead going into the evening session playing John Higgins, a world number 2 at that time, took him 5.